Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 3rd, 2014, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Did I steal your thunder there? Were you hoping to do it first?
It's all right, because I look better as a little cherub with my little Happy New Year sash on.
Oh, man.
You can wish everybody a happy birthday, but when they think, or Happy New Year, when they think Happy New Year, they're going to think me, my chubby little body.
You and your chubby. Well, you're losing weight, actually. I think I'm actually the chubby one again now.
I went back up, so... Still down from where I was, but it's going to be a back on the diet now.
Yeah, me too. Hardcore. Holidays are brutal.
Oh, they are, aren't they?
Yeah, they're always brutal for me. Well, speaking of stealing things, this is an interesting story. I mean, this is like, to me, this is like James Bond espionage kind of stuff here.
Except that James Bond would never got caught doing any of this.
That's true.
It's more like James Bend.
James Bend. James Bind.
James Bind is even better. Yeah, the story's been out for a while, and I've loosely known about it, and then we started getting a fair amount of emails from folks asking whether we're going to talk about it, and I finally saw an article about it that I thought made it worth talking about.
Yeah.
And so here's the deal. There's this high-limit Scandinavian poker pro. Apparently was at a casino, came up to the hotel room, looked for his laptop. Laptop not there. Thought, hey, you know, maybe one of my buddies borrowed it or something. Okay, that's a great relationship. I don't want you touching my stuff, Cosenza. Back off. Left, came back, and the laptop magically reappeared where it was. And, you know, logged on and just kind of had a feeling that something wasn't right. So he took it to this computer experts at this Finnish lab, and they scanned it, and Trojan horse virus installed on there that allows... people to tap into his computer and see his whole cards when he plays online against him.
Man.
That is sick, isn't it?
Unbelievable. That's like, you know, putting bugs in the lights and, you know, on the phone to hear what they're having to say. And I mean, that's like serious espionage right there, man. I mean, how do you even... First of all, you have to find... Okay, I know this person is this person online. And so it has to be an inside job. They have to know who you are. They have to probably be friends with you or know some sort of pattern of your life that they would know when you're going to be where and what, and that's the laptop that you play on, and then they have to install it and then return it. I mean, without getting
caught. And get into your hotel room.
That's what I'm saying, and the hotel room. How they even did that, I have no idea. That is just some crazy stuff there. And, like, we don't have enough to worry about or enough things trying to keep us from getting online poker passed. Now they're going to be like, now you got to be worried about people going into your house and stealing your computer. And oh, man. And it's called sharking.
Yeah, it turns out this is not an isolated incident.
Yeah.
A couple other pros kind of thought the same thing, went to the same lab, and they found the same thing on their laptops. And so this term has been coined sharking, which I love it. And so, I mean... I mean, at this point now, I mean, this is like, you know, being, yeah, I've been fortunate in my life. I haven't had, you know, people break into my house or anything or steal anything. But the people that I've known have done that. You just feel so violated.
Oh, yeah.
At that point, don't you, right? And then you just never feel, you never feel safe ever again, right? Once this happened once. So I don't know how these people, how are you ever going to be able to play now without full-time scanning of your computer to make sure the stuff isn't here.
Yeah, and to really now have to better protect the computer itself when you leave it somewhere. Like, you're going to have to always insist on, like, a large safe in your room or always take it with you, you know, when you're home, lock it up. Or, I mean, oh, that's just... Oh, that's just sickening. And yeah. So it was sort of like it was conveying their screenshot to them. It wasn't like they went into their online software and then could see their software that way. It was sort of conveying an image to them on their computer.
Yeah, I guess it's like a remote kind of thing. Yeah, most of our listeners are far better educated on computer stuff than we are, so I'm sure we're all just, you know, making them cringe right now talking about it in general. But my understanding is that it's, you know, one of these pieces of software that allows remote access to somebody else's computer, which, you know, there's a lot of good reasons to do that. Obviously, there's some bad reasons, and this is a bad thing. So apparently when you're logged on and playing, this person can remote access your computer and, I guess, just sit there and watch. So if they're at the same table, they can see your cards, and so it wouldn't be on their same screen. Kind of like not like the Ultimate Bet thing, where you know, it's not like all the cards are just visible in one. You know, you have to have two laptops and pay attention. But really, I mean, so obviously this guy is a very high limit online pro, and probably these other folks were too. So I mean, there's a significant chance of profit here that would make it worth doing all this stuff, right? But at the end of the day, here's what I don't understand, and I really want some of our listeners that are better educated about the right in. You know, one of the things that we keep talking about with online, we can tell people that it can be safe because they have all, you know, the poker sites have all this software that looks for instances of collusion, right?
Yeah.
I've never really understood what that is and how it works, and really how successful it really is at finding that. But I want to believe that it is. So therefore, I think even beyond all the stuff that we already talked about, getting into the whole hotel room, infecting the computer, putting it back, and I would think at some point, you know, if the software really does, I'm talking about the poker room software, not this virus, if it really does its thing, I think people would figure that out at some point too, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, it takes a while. There's got to be some sort of a pattern that it can pick up on, or, you know, and, you know, with the other guys, it took human beings, the other cheating scandals, whatever, it took human beings to look at hand histories to notice how they were being played on some of these things. But with this, yeah, the computer ultimately should figure out that, hey, this guy is always at the table with him. Whenever their head's up, he always bluffs, or he, you know, I mean, eventually, I think that software does have that ability from what I learned from the last few scandals and stuff. So, yeah, you're probably right. I think it'll be able to eventually.
I would like to think that these criminals, as brazen as, and they really are brazen, as they are here, would also have learned something from the Ultimate Bet. I mean, I'm not saying I want them to learn. I want them to fail and be squished immediately here. But I'd like to think they're smart enough to know that, you know, you're going to have to tank some hands.
Yeah, exactly.
It's work, right? You can't just, oh, I've got pocket aces and it's raised, or I've got pocket kings and it's raised one time. Pre-flop, and I fold because I could tell this guy's aces. You know, you can't do that. You're going to have to play it out, right? And have a couple of coolers just to throw the scent off of the online dogs, right? But but man, no, I just really, I can't get past the fact that I just, I would never feel safe now. And that's really tough for me because, you know, I'm one of these people that's going around telling these people that don't understand online poker, don't worry, there are safeguards. It can be safe. And now I'm not really sure myself.
Yeah, I think, like you said, if it was long enough, the computer stuff would catch on and know that something was going wrong. But like you said, these guys should be savvy enough now to, if they're going to go through to all this trouble to put the virus on their computer. But you also, too, now, it's the Scandinavian player said something's not right here. So he picked up on it pretty quick, too. Yeah. So that says something about the software.
Well, I mean, I got to think that he is as smart or smarter than me, and I'm going to go with smarter.
Yeah.
And if I came back to my hotel room and my laptop wasn't around, I would immediately think something's up, right? Now, I don't know what the relationship is with his buddies and stuff. You know, maybe, hey, you know, I borrowed your laptop. Maybe that's just what they always do. I don't do that, but I would think that obviously is the big tip-off. And then for it to just magically show back up, I mean, you know, I like to drink from time to time, but I'd like to think that when I came back, it would be a drunken stupor that, oh, hey, oh, the laptop was here all along. I just didn't see it sitting there. So that's a big red flag at that point. So I got to think, you know, it's kind of like, you know, watching these movies, these caper movies, you know, where they're like, everything just goes right. You're like, oh, my God, he's coming down the hallway. Quick, get out of there.
Yeah.
In this case, he didn't get out of there, right? Got caught. And then, like, crud. Now what do we do? Well, let's keep going with it.
Well, you know, one of the things that you brought about not feeling safe, I think you and I probably talked about this privately, but never on the show, but when we worked at the Times, did you ever have that situation where you're like, hey, IT, I can't get this to work on my computer, and they're like, all right, hang on, I'll fix it from here, and then you see your cursor moving around the screen, and they're working on your computer, yeah, and they're not there? That, ever since that happened, when I worked at the Times, I was like, okay, I'm not sending anything at all that's incriminating or interesting at all through my email or on my screen or nothing, because anybody can look at your screen at any time when you were at work. So I know that feeling, not to this extent, you know, being violated at my hotel room or my home or something, but yeah, I know that exact feeling of not feeling safe ever again, you know, just watching the IT guy work on my computer while he's not there. He's in another whole,
yeah,
he's in another
pretty
city.
Common now. I've had, yeah, three or four pieces of software since we started the company, you know, where I called folks up and I'm like, hey, this isn't working. And they're like, all right, if you don't mind, we can download this piece of software that I can fix it for you. And I'm like, sure. And then that's even scarier. I mean, at least at IT, it's not my computer.
Yeah.
You know, at the Times, I didn't, yeah, you know, if something happens, why do I care, you know? But now it's my own personal computer, and somebody in, you know, India now is, like, you know, flipping around with my screen. And obviously I need them to fix the problem I have. But then you always wonder afterwards, you,
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, and it goes back to everything, back to the Wild Wild West, you know. So, I mean, I don't think the sharking thing is a really big deal for most of our listeners, including us, that would have a couple hundred bucks online, you know, even if we had it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be worth going to that effort, I don't think. For smaller fish, obviously, it was worth going to the effort for these big-time players.
And then one last thing. This morning, I looked at the file that we started these stories on, and my eyes were kind of groggy because I had a rough New Year's, and I thought it said sharding.
Sharding?
And I'm like, are you, what? Somebody sharding on somebody's computer? What is this?
Oh, my God.
And then I was like, oh, okay. So if you don't know what sharding is, shoot me an email. You know?
I want to wait until after work to Google that one.
But on the exact opposite, right, of the spectrum, yeah. I love this story, and I was actually going to point this out to you because I didn't think you had seen it, but you did, and it automatically raises a question of who was the fare in the cab that did this. But a cabbie found $300,000 in the back seat of his cab after picking up an unidentified poker pro from the Bellagio, and this was everywhere. It was on Yahoo, it was on everywhere, Facebook, anything, and you could probably, you know, convey some sort of social story. This was everywhere. And they tracked down the guy, gave him back his money, and the cabbie got a $10,000 tip for it.
Yeah, for the poker pro. And also, I think he got $1,000 from the cab company.
Yeah, for like employee of the month or whatever you call that stuff. But yeah, I mean, it recalls the Chip story when he took, I guess he went out to get gas or something, and he put like six figures of money on, in a bag on top of the roof of his car while he was pumping gas in Vegas, and then like drove off, and it was on top of his car the whole time until he got home. And I mean, to me, sometimes these poker pros, they just don't think that money means nothing to them. I mean, it means something, but it means nothing too. It's crazy.
It's just so weird. I mean, you know, probably the most I ever have on me is $1,000, and that's like, you know, when I'm going on vacation and want to play.
Yeah.
And even then, I'm freaked out. You know, on one of these recent trips, I was like going down, it wasn't really a dark alley like the movie, but it wasn't a place I felt completely safe. And I'm like, gosh, you know, if I get rolled here, that's $1,000. $300,000. Now I know it's scaled, obviously. So $300,000 to this guy is probably like $1,000 to me, but still, you know, there's so much stuff that came out of this when I saw it. I mean, one, obviously an amazing, honest cabbie. And I know it's easy for us all to say, you know, well, we like to think most people would do that. And I really do think most people would have done that. But that's a pretty big, I mean, $300,000 for any kind of service worker. That's, you know, a couple years, you know, of not having to work there. And it would be very easy, knowing it's cash, just to say, hey, it's not here, I don't find it, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, grand kudos to him for that. But then another thing, too, is just, and I don't want to pick on this pro because it might be somebody we know.
That's right.
But it's just mind-boggling to me that someone's carrying around $300,000. Now, obviously, you're coming out of the Bellagio and that. I just, I, I don't understand this lifestyle where they carry on this much cash. I would think, you know, you have safety deposit boxes. You got other ways of moving the money around, yeah, I guess. Yeah. So I'm just curious if this is if poker pros do this just because this is the lifestyle and everybody else does it this way, or is this a trying to avoid taxes kind of thing? And if that is the case, hey, $300,000 that you could have lost in this cab very easily.
Yeah.
You know, flip a coin and you might have got a different cabbie that said, see ya. Far worse than paying whatever taxes you should have been paying on all this, right?
Yeah.
It just, you know, I was in New York earlier this year and I lost my sunglasses and it's been killing me. $3 pair of sunglasses from that stupid H&M store. And the reason I'm so upset about it is not because it's $3, is I don't have to go back into H&M and buy these sunglasses again. And I'm like, I'm sure they just fell out of my pocket. I'm like, how could I be so reckless? How could I have lost these sunglasses that I love? It was $300,000. You better believe I'm in a cab with $300,000. It's going to be like, it's going to be shackled to me like the nuclear codes.
Yeah.
You know, that the president has, right?
The other thing,
how can you get out and go, say, oh, you know, hey, where's my money? Yeah.
You know, there's one other thing, too, that people didn't really consider was, what if, like, when he dropped this guy off, another person got into the cab right away, was sitting in the back seat and just taking a ride, looked down, finds a bag of $300,000, leaves with it. Now the cabbie, it looks like the cabbie took it, and he didn't, you know, and then someone else has got that $300,000, and you know if you get into a cab and there's $300,000 in that cab, I don't think you're going to say, hey, cabbie, there's $300,000 in this cab. You're saying, hey, pull over right here, I'm ready to get out. You take the $300,000 and you go. So, I mean, I don't see how, you know, that's crazy to me that this guy left $300,000 and didn't think twice about it. And then the cabbie returned it was just, it's like the huge, that's the way we should be. You know, that's the way everybody should be, even though it could have changed his life. I mean, think about it. $300,000 would, that's a lot more than 2 years of work for a cabbie. That's, he could retire on that almost. That's crazy. Wow. I don't understand how you could be in that mindset of forgetting $300,000 or not having it, like you said, just strapped to your body or white knuckling it the whole way. How do you not even, I don't care how much money you have. You know, you watch these Shark Tank TV shows and these guys have billions and there's a little old lady begging for $25,000 for 90% of her business.
Right. Yeah.
And these guys are like, you know what, it's been done already. Someone else could do it better than squash you. You're dead to me. Goodbye. I'm out. And I'm like, these people have $300,000, and it's just crazy to me. That is, when I saw that story, I was like, we got to get this on the show. I really hope that the guy comes forward and says, I'm the pro, that, you know, not so we can make fun of him, but just so we can, somebody can ask him, dude.
Well, I mean, but yeah, here's the thing. I mean, we're already making fun of this person, right?
A little bit.
It's a little bit, yeah. But I mean, I'm sure other people are not being as kind as we are right? So there's an embarrassment factor there. Two, I don't think you want to identify yourself as someone that's carrying this $300,000 around, you know, because that makes you a target.
Yeah, that's
true. I think back when Greg Raymer got rolled to the hotel and he beat the crap out of the guy, you remember?
Yeah.
And no one really knew. They just, hey, guy's a world champion. He must be carrying a lot of money around. So, I mean, I don't think, you know, obviously you want to go to great lengths to make sure people don't know you're carrying this around. So it doesn't surprise me that hasn't came
forward. Yeah.
But and really, let's you know, if the pro did come forward, the story's about he or she now, right?
Yeah, we don't
instead
want
of this cabbie. Yeah. And I love the fact that I was like this last weekend. I turned on the TV in the morning when I was getting ready for to go out, and it was like a little bright on the TV news. You know, hey, the cabbie in Vegas that found $300,000 got a $10,000 tip. You know, it should be about him. It shouldn't be about
That's true. Hey, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. I played that over the holiday weekend, had some fun with it.
Excellent.
And I got a new iPad for Christmas, and so I just put in my Apple stuff, and that program comes in automatically. Just upload it, and I'm on my thing now too. So it transfers, and it's awesome.
Perfect.
This comes from Austin Bluffs. We actually have a hotline clip this week. Yay! Let's see what he says.
Hey, NEF Nation, this is longtime listener and two-time swag winner Austin Bluffs, or I go by Hanger 18 on Poker Stars. I'd just like to try to close out the year with a player spotlight with two things. The first one is a challenge, and the second one is some thoughts. First of all, on the challenge, our last Papes event for the year is tonight. I haven't seen you guys playing lately, and I'd like to throw down a challenge, see if you guys will show up and play tonight. And the second thing is I'm going to be closing this year out with a $283 loss as a recreational player, and I'm going to go to my final session in Black Hawk, Colorado tomorrow. And I'm kind of going into this thinking that I want to go in there with a stop win, that as soon as I have a dollar profit for the year, I know I should be looking at it as one long game, especially as a recreational player, and I shouldn't be concerned with short wins or losses, but I do think there is some advantage to having a psychological boost to have a year-end win, especially since I like to use poker tracking software and just see my results. So just appreciating your thoughts on that. Great show. I'll be listening to you all through 2014, and had a happy new year.
All right, well, he realized he missed last week's show. He's trying to get it on the last last show of the year, right? Yeah. And so he did send us an update, so we'll start by saying the update. He said, first of all, I got a kitchen pass to go play poker on Thursday, so I miss Papes that night myself. He says, secondly, I booked a win of $300 that night, decided not to play anymore until the new year so I could wrap up the year as a $7 winner. And then he followed up that later with saying, you know, hey, Scott, I know $7 doesn't sound very significant, but to me it's just important to do that. And I wrote back, I mean, no, it's absolutely significant. There's nothing insignificant about setting a goal and making it. And that's exactly what he did. He wanted to go out the year with a win, and he got just enough to do that. So, yeah, I mean, we'd all like to be walking into a cab with $300,000 in our pocket, but I guarantee you there's a lot of us, myself included, that were not a winner in 2013. So that $7 is pretty important.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. It's tough. You want to have that as, you know, you always want your year to be a positive year, especially for, you know, whatever, you know, the goal that you might have set. But don't put so much pressure on yourself either to force one last session and try to win 300. You know, that to me is you're putting more pressure on yourself than you need to. He admits that it's a all one big session, and just because don't put any significance on a date, but it is nice to say I played for a year and I was a winner, and that's really sweet. And it's not easy to win, you know, if you're playing at, he played in Blackhawk or whatever, they don't have huge games there, so you must have been playing something like 1-2 or 2-5. So it's not always easy to book, you know, a $300 win when you need $300 and you have to win, you know what I mean, to do it. So congrats, Austin, that's pretty cool, and nice job for, you know, pulling out a win for the whole year. But like you said, though, just always remember, it's really not about the year. It's about your whole session of life, so.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. But at the same time, because I'm one of those big guys that, like you said, that I don't really care what the date on the calendar is. Like, you know, sometimes my wife is like, oh, I can't believe you're going to be out of town for your birthday. And I'm like, so? we'll celebrate when I get back. Well, but it won't be your birthday. I'm like, why does it matter if it's on my birthday or not? It's the celebration that matters.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. I mean, I think, in general, I think people put too much credence in year-to-year New Year's resolutions and starting now. I mean, why not, you know, start a New Year's resolution in April if you're just going to improve yourself? You know, I started losing the weight and exercising in March. I mean, you know, had I talked about it at that point, I said, no, you know what, I'll wait till January. Then that would be, you know, 700 pounds.
I was going to say, you might have exploded.
So, I mean, I do think it's kind of ridiculous, and I'm glad that he understands that. But I will say this, too. It does help with goal setting. I mean, there is something about a time frame that does help.
Sure.
And, you know, that's why I try to convey to him in a couple of emails back and forth and why that $7 really is significant, that, you know, you set a goal and you made it. So, you know, obviously you're going to set a bigger goal for this year. I mean, I don't think the goal now is to be an $8 winner at the end of this year. But, you know, every little goal that you can accomplish is worth celebrating, so.
Sure, there's something to be said for success breeding success, you know.
So that's just it. He's going to go into the next game confident now because he ended this year $7 winner, and that's going to end up probably making him more than $7, and that's what I think you're going to understand.
Yeah. And he's going to have to learn to not be so hypocritical and say, we better play 8 Papes, and then he didn't show up and play them. So, yeah, you should probably send us that $7 for making us feel bad. So you broke even for the year.
No, I do feel bad that I have not played very much Papes. I probably only played once or twice this year.
Yeah, me too. I played two, I think.
You know, I like to say it's partially because I'm on the road all the time, but I'd like to get back into that. So, I mean, I want folks to know that the community is still really important to us, and if I get that opportunity to play going forward, I'll certainly take this little polite kick in the rear.
The other thing, too, is it would be so much nicer if the software that they have for the tablets and the phones included home games.
Yeah.
Because then it's a lot easier for me to say, hey, I'm going to be at my parents' house that night, but, you know, I can take an hour away and sit in Papes and joke around everybody and then get it all in on one hand, you know, or something, to at least just be there for them. But sometimes when I'm away, I can't play, or even if I'm home and it's, you know, it's been a long day or something, and I've been sitting at the computer all day working, and my butt is numb. The last thing I want to do is sit down and play for another 2 or 3 hours for something that, you know, is going to be out there again the next month, you know?
Sure.
So, but if I could lay down in bed and relax, or lay down on the couch and relax with an iPad or a phone and play it. So hopefully they'll come up with that this year. They'll improve the app and get that involved, and then I'll probably play a lot more of those and get involved in the Player of the Year run.
All right, well, it's time for Call the Floor. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiappmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled, and we've been obliterated with emails.
Okay, I was waiting for you to say what. I thought we were blowing up or something. I didn't know what happened there.
It's extremely popular. We just get I sent 3 more off to Jody in the last couple of days. So
cool.
People love this segment. I said this week's sponsor is J Design Playing Cards, official playing cards of Antiup. Check out J Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. This week comes from Ivan, and this is an interesting one because it's not really a call floor, but it's a hypothetical.
Yeah.
But it's a fun one. It says, in an anecdote from one of TJ Cloutier's books, he claims to have bluffed someone out of a pot after his cards were accidentally mucked by the dealer. Player A bet, and player B goes to bet, but he realizes his cards are gone, even though he never folded. He figures the dealer must have mucked his cards, but he bets anyway while holding his hands in front of him as if he's protecting cards. A lot easier to do when you have TJ's massive hands.
That's right.
I'm not going to be hiding any cards under my hands, I promise you that. Player A announces a fold and mucks his cards. The dealer goes to push the pot to player B, and only then notices player B has no cards. So who does the pot belong to? Also, if player A is awarded the pot, is player B still on the hook for the raise he made after his hand was dead?
This is really interesting. Jody says, I would explain that we do not allow players to take shots at each other and warn the offending player sternly that another incident along these lines would result in him being asked to leave. The pot should be awarded to the last player with live cards. I would not force the shot taker to make good on his bet without cards. So in other words, he's saying the guy who didn't have the cards didn't have cards, and the other guy did have cards. Even though he mucked, he was the last one to actually have cards. Everybody noticed he had cards, and he would hit the pot. So
yeah, but he would not get all the money from the...
Right, he wouldn't get the raise money.
For the raise.
Yeah.
Which seems to be the fair way to do it.
Yeah, you can't hold somebody accountable for the raise if you can't let them win the pot that way, too. So
exactly.
That makes sense. So that's pretty cool. TJ's got some awesome stories.
He does. He's been around for 80 years now, right?
I think he played, I think he check-raised Wild Bill Hickok once. So he's been around a long time, but his stories are always funny, and that was one of the best weeks of my life, just sitting and having dinner with him every single night and having them tell me those stories. They're just priceless, but... Hey, we got a brand new O'Malley's Move for a brand new year. Let's get to it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a mixed game, $1, $2, HO, with the Omaha rounds being high-low. We've been at the table for quite a while now and have a profit of $100. We sit with 4. This is our regular game, so we know many of the players here. The table's six-handed. With 3 players that know the game well, and 3 that are extremely inexperienced, we're the big stack at the table. We find ourselves in the no-limit Omaha 8 round for this one. The blinds post, under the gun calls, plus 1 folds, cutoff folds, button folds, and we're in the small blind with the ace of diamonds, king of clubs, four of hearts, three of spades. This isn't an ideal starting hand in Omaha 8, but then again, is there such thing? Even though we'll be out of position the entire hand, we elect to make the call based on the belief that we are the best of the three remaining players in the hand. The big blind checks. Our assessment on the big blind is, he is the type of player who is good at this game, but timid. When he has a good hand, he often slow plays it or undervalues it. Based on his lack of confidence in his Omaha game, which isn't too bad, he's a decent player. The under the gun is very new to the game, and could honestly have anything. Both these players sit with around 150. There's $6 in the pot, and the flop comes out the Jack of Diamonds, Tray of Hearts, Tray of Clubs. This is a pretty good flop for us. We've got three of a kind with the best kicker, so we're only losing to Jack-Jack or Jack-3. We decide to make a stab at the pot. We bet pot, $6. The big blind looks a little distraught and thinks for quite a while before calling the bet. The under-the-gun min raises us another $6. This confuses us a little, but we ultimately decide to call, knowing full well this opponent is capable of having anything. The big blind calls again after some thought. The turn is the seven of clubs. This card at first glance is an uninteresting one, however, it puts a ton of draws on the board. There's a flush draw, a straight draw, and now a low draw, which we even have, to the nut low, should a two come. There's $42 in the pot, and once again, we're in that gut-wrenching scenario in which we're out of position in Omaha high-low 8 or better split. What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Antiup logo version. Don't forget to use code ANTIUP for free shipping. And this one comes from Jay. And he says it's been a little over a year since he sent in his last hand of the week, but he hasn't missed an episode. We appreciate that very much.
Okay.
Says he had an interesting hand come up over the weekend at Hollywood Casino in Kansas City. I was sitting at a pretty loose, aggressive table and been there for a few hours. I was in the game for 300 and was sitting with Squiggly 650. And he says, long lives a Squiggly! Should be everybody's New Year's resolution when you send a hand of the weekend too. Use a squiggly.
Always use a squiggly.
Says, I'm on the button and straddle for six. And he says, I usually don't straddle when I have a smaller stack, but I will with a big stack to induce large pots when I have position. And he's a real hand of the week here, so I don't want to get too off track. But I want to talk a little bit about the button straddle here, because because I kind of like what he's thinking here. And what I wrote back to him, and I'm curious what you had to say too, is that... one of the things that I learned from our good friend Lee Childs is, you know, hey, if you get the button straddle, do it every single time because you're in position. And a lot of rooms don't allow the button straddle. They only allow you to straddle in order.
Right.
In under the gun, which is obviously much tougher to play, right?
Yeah.
On our cruise ships, you can only do it under the gun. So the fact that you have an option of straddling on a button, I do understand the theory of doing it pretty much every time. But I think Jay takes it to an extra extreme that says, you know, hey, if I got a smaller stack, I'm not going to do it. But when I have a big stack, I'm going to do it fairly often. And I think this goes back to, you know, playing kill pots, all this kind of stuff we talked about. If you can make your opponents uncomfortable, do it. And I think that's the case here. If you've got a big stack now where people know if they tangle with you, they could be felted, and you've got the opportunity to be as this casino allows you to make the game play bigger when you're in position, it seems crazy to me not to do it.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as saying crazy, but I think it's a good idea. Because here's the deal. When I'm playing, if I win a few pots early on and I've got a nice kind of stack already, I love to speculate. That's when I play my best, is when I'm speculating and taking advantage of position. So this is kind of like you speculating, but just doing it was sort of a clairvoyant kind of way of doing it. You know, you're putting the money out there before you're speculating, but, you know, it's only six or whatever it is, whatever you're playing, so...
Well, but again, though, if you straddle, I think more often than not, you're going to want to raise the straddle, too.
So yeah, but I mean, in other words, you're forcing yourself to to see more hands too. You're forcing yourself to get involved. It's kind of like speculating when you're limping with you know speculative hands. So I like the idea of and the other thing too is you have to remember that when you generally when you straddle on the button, then the small blind is the first to act in the hand. It's not the guy after the big blind anymore. So the action starts right away with people who already have money invested in the pot. So the dead hands are the ones that are acting first, and if they actually put some money in the pot, you got extra money. You got to take that pretty seriously too when you're playing this way.
Sure.
You know, we do a lot of that in Vegas. When we were out there in Vegas, the button straddle is everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's something you have to adjust to. So many times people are folding out of turn, and it starts that whole sprinkler head thing where they're all right in a row, just folding, and you. So sometimes I don't like it because it really creates havoc at the table for people who aren't prepared for it, and it kind of throws the rhythm of the table off and everything. But as a player, if you're raising from that position blindly like that, you know, why not make them uncomfortable? Why not, you know, get some more money in the pot when you can afford it?
Sure. All right. So he says, okay. So he says the blinds fold and a middle position player squiggly 300 makes it 16. So that can't be right. So somebody early positions must have folded. Not the blinds.
No, the blinds would have folded.
Or the blinds start.
See, now look, this is why you don't do the button straddle, because it confuses even you.
Yes, it does.
I literally just said all to right. you, remember yeah. that the blinds act first. So this is what pisses me off at the table when they do it. Because then you're like, everyone's confused. And so yeah, this is absolutely right. The blinds would fold and the middle position player would be out.
Gotcha.
So there you go.
One more reason not to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so the blindfold middle position player with squiggly 300 makes it 16.
Okay.
The cutoff with squiggly 200 calls, and I looked down at jack of spades, five of diamonds. Remember, we're on the button with $6 in.
Jack of spades, nine of diamonds?
Jack of spades, five of diamonds.
Five of diamonds. Oh, man. Oh, well, I mean, that's the thing. We're playing No Limit Hold'em here, and if you believe that you know how these people can play or whatever, you can totally squeeze here already because you're the button and you're straddling, so you're supposed to, not supposed to, it's not written anywhere, that's just ridiculous to say that, but generally you've said, I'm going to take control of this hand and I have position on you for the rest of the hand, take your chances with me, here's a huge raise. That's what they always do, and mm-hmm. So when I'm playing with guys like that, I generally just slow play my hand and then let them do that to me, and then I come over the top and take their money down, and they think twice about doing it later. So, as Jay here, I have seen plenty of button straddlers fold to raises. They don't automatically just re-raise.
Right.
What they do is they raise when everyone calls their straddle, and then they say, okay, now it's 40 to go, and everyone either folds or calls like an idiot and is out of position and loses another $40 for no reason. So, in this case, I got to be honest, I don't do this often when I'm in Vegas. I have done it, but I don't do it often. But in this case, I would have let it go. I mean, I guess I could say, okay, you're not playing the cards, you're playing the people, you're playing the position. So if I'm going to play that way, it's just hard for me to defend it after this if Jay doesn't do what I do. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not easy to do hand of the week, but if I'm confident, because he's been up, he's up, what, 350 at least here from what he started with, so he knows how to play these people. So if he generally gets the impression that the MP is going to be, you know, weak, or the cutoff obviously didn't have anything, and that's why he just called and didn't raise, or re-raise, I mean, maybe I do just now make it 50 and see if they're willing to come along, and now I've got position. But it can get big after that. You make it 50 and they call or re-raise you, now you just put out 50 for no reason because this guy obviously had a hand to raise your straddle. So there are a lot of ways to go with this in my mind. I would have no problem if Jay said, bazinga, I folded, no hand of the week.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd be fine with that. I wouldn't be fine with a call.
Okay.
Jack 5 and calling, what are you, floating now? You know, okay, so you got a decent enough hand to float these guys, and now you're going to outplay them? If you're going to outplay them, you might as well outplay them now before it gets out of hand. So if I'm going to play the hand, it's going to be for a raise. I can't call. I can't call. I may be wrong, but why are you calling and then hoping that the guy misses the flop and then you try to force more money into this pot? If I'm going to be the button guy like most of these button straddlers do, I'm going to say, no. You don't raise my straddle. Here's 50. You know, now let's see if you want to play with me out of position. You know, that's what I would do if I was up 350 and I played the way he's been playing all along and whatever. But that's just me. I want to hear your side of it.
Yeah, well, I think this is what I think you have to understand if you start getting into the game of straddling, is that you have to anticipate these scenarios and figure out how you're going to play them before you even look at your cards. Yeah. So, I'm not saying you do the same thing every time, but I think you come up with your system. And so if Jay has a system here, that's great. I'm going to defend whatever he wants to do here. But the danger in this straddle is that, one, if you fold every time someone raises in this situation, then somebody's going to raise you every single time, and you're just giving away $6.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So you can't do that. If you call every time, like you said, you're obviously playing the pot bigger with the worst of it, although the best position, and that could be pretty dicey. So if that's going to be what you're going to do, then you're going to need to be able to take some chances on the flop, turn a river, because and use your position to your advantage, even the weaker hand. So if you're not capable of doing that, then I would never call here.
Yep.
And if you raise here, obviously, depending on if you raise every single time that you're straddling, eventually people are going to catch on to that and do exactly what you said you're going to do, which is the way to play against a straddler like this, is wait for them to have a good hand and then brutalize them. And I probably wouldn't just slow play. I would still make this raise with 16 and hope that he comes over the top with me, raises me again so I can raise it big. And at that point, then you're committed preflop to a huge pot with crap. And you're going to have to be able to have the discipline to really put this guy to a test. And that's why it goes back to his original idea that, you know, when they get a bigger stack, you have more options. If you got a smaller stack, then it's really tough to play this,
yeah,
this straddle, right? Yeah. So I guess, not trying to be wishy-washy, I could make a case for all this. I'm just making a case that you need to have that plan in action before you look at your cards, and you know how often you're going to mix it up, and not let the cards affect it at that point, because you need to keep everybody off kilter.
Yeah, and the other thing too is it's great to have a plan, but always be able to adjust that plan. If this guy who made it 16 gave you some sort of indication that he was wicked strong, and not that he slammed his chips in the middle or anything, but you just picked up on something, well then, yeah, you had a plan to say, if somebody raises, I'm going to come over the top or 50 or whatever it is. You can change that plan if you believe this guy. You know, I mean, there's no reason to have to stick to the plan either, but having a plan is good.
And I think the plan is a little bit more nuanced. I think it needs to be nuanced. So, yeah. For example, here's a situation where we got crappy cards, and I'm going to fold to this raise. But if I fold to this raise right now, what I'm going to tell myself is that the next time I button straddle and somebody makes a 16, I cannot fold, regardless of what I have. I got to play back and make sure that they know that I'm just not going to fold every single time they raise. So, you know, you could decide, all right, Jack 5, maybe I want to take a shot now, and maybe it's because, you know, you can read on them, or, I mean, you got to take into account all that kind of stuff. But if you fold here, and then next time you have deuce tray and you fold again, then that's got to be the last time you button straddle, I think.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you. You straddle to 6, right? What's the structure here? 1-3?
It's good to even say, actually, to be honest.
If it's 1-2, the straddle would be 4. If it's 2-5, the straddle would be 10, right? So I don't know what...
It could be 1-3.
That's what I say. It must be 1-3, I guess. Yeah. I just didn't know they dealt 1-3 there. Okay.
Yeah. All right, so all that being said, I guess in the vacuum right now here, it doesn't make much sense to me to play this hand.
Right.
So I would fold. But that's in the vacuum. You know, if this is the 7th time he's straddled and the 3rd time that someone's raised and he's got a system down, then I'm going to give him some rope here, depending on what he's going to do the rest of this hand.
Yeah, if this is like the 3rd time that someone's raised him and he's folded it, he might be saying, I'm nuss enough, the next time someone does that to me, I'm putting my foot down. But in a vacuum, generally, Jack 5 is not a hand that you want to go crazy with unless you're confident these players are going to fold to your aggression at whatever stage you make that aggressive move, whether it's now or after the flop, floating the turn, whatever. So I like the move of raising here. If you think these guys are going to check to you after the flop and you're going to be able to take it down or whatever. But generally, if I haven't folded my button a lot on the straddle like this, if I've been playing it aggressively and it's been working, and now these guys are coming in, then they're saying, okay, I don't care what you have, because I know if you come up aggressively now, I'm putting money in the pot willingly here to play with you. I would fold hand.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so this is what Hoover said. He says, I know this is why straddling is stupid. Feel like you have to defend the small race. Well, we just talked about, you know, have to feel that way.
But right.
Yes, generally speaking, you're going to have to defend. He says, still, I'm getting 4-1. I have to call $10 a pot of squiggly 40, so I make the call and see a flop of 8 of clubs, jack of clubs, 7 of hearts. He says, the pot is squiggly 50, and the original raiser leads out for 20, and the cutoff calls, and it's back to us.
See, I still don't like it. There's no way you can like that. Why? Because you have top pair? I mean, if you raise now you're putting in more money than you would have had you just raised preflop to see if these guys would fold. You know, because if you're going to raise, you're going to make it like 60 or so.
Right.
You know, now you've put 16 out and 60. Now you've put 76 out instead of like 50 to see where you were beforehand. Maybe even get them to fold preflop or whatever, get heads up. But you've taken no control of this hand now. The idea of the straddle is that you have control and you've done nothing with the control by just calling. To me, this is what I feel. So I don't care that I hit that jack. I'm not raising. You know, I may even fold. You know, I was hoping that these, if I was going to call in this situation, I would hope that these guys would be dubious of that and fold, I mean, or check the flop, and then I could bet it. But if they're still betting me after taking control of the hand preflop, they can easily have queens, ace jack. They could have jack 10. It doesn't matter. They're crushing us. So are we playing the player or are we playing the cards?
And it's not just playing the players, it's playing the players.
Players too, exactly.
We got two players in this hand now, so.
Yeah, you got a caller, so one of these guys has us beat.
Yeah, even if you think the Razor's just got like ace-king or something and it's seeing a continuation bet, what is the other guy calling with at this point?
Right. Could have been jack 10 of hearts or something, you know?
It could be a club draw, it could be all kinds of things, but the fact that we have to be two players with top pair of weak kicker is really dicey, I think, with two cards to come.
Yeah. Yep, I can't raise here. I mean, if I raise here, it's got to be because I really believe these guys are, one is c-betting, the other one's drawing, and I have to be able to get them off that. And now I'm risking way more than I would have had to have risked had I played this traditionally in the front before the flop. So, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I call and try a float. If they both check and it's a blank on the turn, maybe I take it away. That's the smallest way that you can get away for this, I think, is to call the 20.
Yeah, I think it's tough at this point to fold the 20 because we cut off the action here. That's important, which is part of the reason you straddle the button. So we know it's not going to get raised again preflop.
Right.
The pot's already up to squiggly 90 now, right?
Yeah.
So 20 bucks in. If another jack comes, if the 5 comes, you know, it's worth it to me at that point. I can't see folding now since I raised and I got top pair even though it's weak. The fact that they set the bet pretty low. I mean,
it's 20
is reasonable. Half the pot.
Yeah, 20 is definitely reasonable in the call.
I got a call here and then just got to know that I'm going to be very, very cautious after this. I'm putting more money in unless I improve here.
Yeah, I could see somebody folding if they really believed one of these players had me beat. And if I believed that, then I would actually either fold or raise because I want to see how strong they had me beat. If I knew that they were both drawing, then I would definitely raise. But it's hard to tell. That first guy who raised, knowing that we're on a straddle and we do it all the time, you know, he's got to have something. And Jack High with a 5 kicker could be beat there. So I think I would call and try to float it and see if what happens on the turn.
All right, so our hero says, both actions seem pretty weak to me on this board. Betting less than half a pot on this wet board seems like a scared continuation bet, and the call feels a lot like a draw. However, if the cutoff flopped a monster like 9-10, he might be inclined to call and try to get me to come along. The club draw makes this a little less likely, though. I don't like calling myself because I get almost no information about their hands. Also, I don't like folding here because it'd be a huge leap to make the previous call and then fold to a small bet when I actually flop top.
Right. It's funny, though, that, and I'm not trying to interrupt, I don't know if there's more to say, but it's funny that he says, a call gives me no information, yet he just explained for two sentences all the information he already got from the first bet. So
it's true.
He doesn't need, how much more information does he need? He knows, he thinks that one was a weak continuation bet on a wet board and the other one was felt like a call. You got your information. So now if the next card is a blank and the guy who did the weak continuation checks, you were right. If the other guy checks, you were right. Now you steal it. So really, you got your information, I think.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, here we decide to raise to 65 to see where people are at. He says, if I get re-raised, I'm going to have to let go of the hand.
Mm-hmm.
Initial bettor thinks for a while and makes a call. The other guy hems and haws. I always want to hem and haw.
How do you do that? Do you have to go to school? I don't know.
I'm going to have to do a YouTube video to figure out how to hem and haw.
You have to go to a sewing school, I think, to learn how to hem and haw.
The other guy hems and haws a bit, shows his cards to his neighbor. Bad, bad guy.
Yeah.
And makes a disgusted fold. And her hero says, I guess it wasn't a monster. All right, so we got heads up, at least. We got the... Probably, it sounds like we got the draw out, right?
Yeah.
So if he's right, and it is a scary continuation bit, then we've got a lot of power now, surprisingly.
Yeah, sure, if the guy checks the turn. But that call means something, too. That's a huge call to make if you were just doing a weak continuation bet. He's not doing a weak continuation bet now, because if he had ace-king, he wouldn't call. If he had ace-queen, he wouldn't call. Unless they were clubs. If they're ace king clubs, then it's different. But
I don't know. I could see a couple ace queen, ace king calling here.
Calling 45 more.
Against a button straddle that, I don't know how much he's played before. I mean, if he's played solid and he's built that up solidly, then yeah, you're right. It's not. But, but generally, what happens, I think, in straddlers is that people don't want to believe him. And so they're going to make these loose calls because they think they're trying to steal it from us, which really, in a lot of sense, is really what we're trying to do here. We got top pair, but we're really trying to steal this, right?
Mm.
We don't feel too confident with it. So that's why straddles, I think, can be effective, because it would get somebody like me with ace king or ace queen to make this call when I clearly shouldn't, which you said shouldn't, right?
Mm.
But that's why I think that we might. So I'm not going to discount it at that point. So I think at this point, I'm feeling pretty good right now.
I'm going to go on the record and say, Jay, just so if you listen back to that, Scott made it sound like that you just lucked your way into that 350 win. So just so you know, I didn't say that. Scott
no,
said you're a luck box.
I don't know how he played it.
You're a luck box, Jay. That's all Scott has to say. Okay, well, to me, I would think that he has to have something to make that $45 extra call there. I feel like he has.
Ace king, ace queen are something to some people.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't think they are. So to me, if I have it, I'm folding.
I care what my opponent thinks.
Yeah, I'm folding it if I have ace king there. So I think he has something now. I don't think at the end of this hand he's going to have ace king, or he's going to have a hand that isn't made already or doesn't have at least that jack. That's what I think. But we'll see. I have no idea what's going on.
Knows,
so.
Right?
Yeah, no one knows.
All right. The pot's now squiggly 200, and the turn is the 9 of hearts, making the board 8 of clubs, jack of clubs, 7 of hearts, 9 of hearts.
Nice.
And our opponent checks to us.
And the guy who folded kicks himself because he probably had a 10. The other thing is, now we picked up a draw, believe it or not.
Yeah.
You know, we could hit a 6. And
I mean, it could be a drawing dead draw.
Yeah,
but
it could be a draw. Well, he checked to us, so, I don't mind checking, because I want to keep this pot reasonable. If you're going to have to bet now you've invested 65 plus 16, so you're looking at 81. You've invested $81 into this pot, and now there's 200 in the pot, and if you're going to make a reasonable bet here, you're going to have to bet at least 100.
100, yeah.
So now you've put $170 into this pot with Jack 5, with a guy who knew you were straddling and bet and called him and then called your raise again. I don't mind checking behind, because if I'm going to bet 100, I would think on the end, if this guy wants to steal it from us, he's going to bet 100. So if I'm going to bet 100 here and he's going to call, I'm wasting 100. Why not check and control the pot a little bit? This is a 1-3 game.
Yeah.
And let the guy... the other thing is, if he does have your ace king or ace queen, he could catch up on the river on us and screw you. But
right, and that's what I think. This is one of those situations where everybody preaches position, position, position. This is a situation where our position actually hurts us, I think.
Yeah.
Because now a card comes. I don't like this 9 of hearts at all. Forget about the possible straight draw. I really hate the 9 of hearts, because now this guy had a 10. We're drawing dead.
Yeah.
Well, almost not drawing dead. We could split the pot, I guess. Right.
Yeah. Well, technically, yeah, exactly. Split the pot. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I bet now, I could get raised, and then you're right. I'm going to put $100 in, and there's no way I can call a raise here, right?
No.
And maybe our opponent knows that. So maybe he's waiting for us to make that bet and raising with anything, regardless of whether he has a 10 or not, right?
Right.
And if we check behind, now it shows weakness, and we know we probably are going to get a bet thrown at us on the river, and we're not going to know at this point. And the river could be anything. You're right. It could be an ace, and so the ace-king catches up. It could be a king, and the ace-king catches up. It could be a queen, the ace-queen catches up. You know, it could be something else. That it, we're giving him so many options to catch up. He has to have something, right?
Yeah.
Even if it's ace-king, he's got something that can that our hand is vulnerable to. So I don't really want to give him the free card.
Yeah, it sucks. So if
our opponent is really smart here, I think he would raise us here. Of course, I don't know what his stack is. What did he say he starts it with? He started a squiggly 300, so...
Right.
He'd probably have to shove on us, right?
Yeah, for a
point, then maybe we don't get away from it. Maybe we have to call. I mean, how much is in the pot right now? That's his.
Well, 70...
65.
That's 81, I said before.
Yeah, 81, so he's got 200. If we call, we bet 100, so... Yeah, he's got a shove, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, you're betting 50% of his stack. So by betting 100, you're literally betting 200. So if you're going to bet 200, you might as well shove. You know what I mean? It's like, what the...
And we've already bet 100, so we get a call. So yeah, you know, I guess, I don't know, the more I think about it, he can always shove on us if he has something.
Yeah. But now it's costing you 200.
He's got to know fold. That we're going to, right.
So you literally made this hand cost you $300 with Jack 5. And you didn't have to. So if you lose, you know... You kind of got what you got. You deserved, in a way, to me. That's what it feels like. Because if this guy has anything that's better than a Jack 5, I don't think he's going to go anywhere. That 10 may have scared, you know, that 9 may have scared to make it if somebody had a 10 in their hand. But would you have really raised with a 10 in your hand? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. Re-raised there. So, I still like checking behind. I don't care about the weakness part of it. If I was willing to bet 100 here to see what he would
do. Let me throw this out. Maybe this is crazy, thinking out of the box, though. But if we don't want to check behind, which I don't think we really want to, I also don't want to bet 100 here in him. What if we made some kind of weird, crazy bet, like 50?
Oh, well,
it doesn't cost us as much,
weird.
But might set the price for him and might not induce him to shove on us.
Yeah, I don't think 50 is a weird bet, actually.
It might be enough for him to think, hey, he's got the 10, but he's trying to string me along, and I'm not going to fall for it. I'm going to fold. 50 might be the most, probably the best bet to make here.
I don't think that's a weird bet. I mean, I've seen, that's a bet that I've seen, God, even on the ship, when we play with our passengers and stuff, that's a bet that they would make all the time, where it's 200 in a pot, and they'd bet 50. So, I, not that it's correct, but I've seen that plenty of times. And then you have to wonder, is it a... please don't go anywhere, call me because I just made my straight bet, or is it a, hey, I'm afraid of the straight, but I want to see right. Where you are bet. So there's a lot of information that can be conveyed in there. It's just which information are you going
to... I think I'd rather sacrifice that 50 with the hope that it could win me the pot than I would to check behind and give this guy all kinds of cards. Because what card is going to come that I'm going to feel confident about besides Jack and a 5 on the river?
Yeah.
Anything else that comes, I'm going to worry about. I mean, the clubs could get there, the hearts could get there. You know, another card that helps us straight out.
Yeah, we gotta hope.
Ace king or queen is gonna be crappy for us. There's really no good cards coming.
What scares me is if he calls and then bets the river. That's what scares me, because then you're like, ugh.
Yeah. At that point, then I think I'm almost, depending on what he bets in the river, I'm almost. That helps me fold at that point. You know, unless it's another like $50 or something ridiculously small, but
right.
That would help me at that point fold on the river.
Okay, so you're thinking 50, I'm thinking check. That sounds right. I mean, those are two decent lines. I think I bet 100 is just so much that if he does have something, we're screwed. We have to call his shove because there's so much out there and we have top pair, you know, and you could get lucky if he doesn't have a 10. You know, he could have an overpair and you can make two pair. But right now, I don't mind the check. It's $200 pot in a 1-3 game. I don't mind keeping it, you know, because you only have 650 to start. He only has 300. You're bloating this pot. You're literally forcing this guy to get it all in there with you, and you have a dubious holding. So, let's see what happens. But I'm checking.
Okay. Our hero says I consider checking, but if he is on an overpair, then I might get him to fold since this is a very scary card, making four to a straight and two flush draws. I bet 80, and he thinks a bit and calls. Now, he went on to say, I think 80 is too small for the pot size, but in a live cash game, people tend just to see the dollar amount, and whether it's a big pot or small pot, they typically don't even know how much is in the pot because it is only in one big pile.
Yeah. See, that's sort of, that's in between what we thought was proper and what you were trying to get away with. Yeah. So it's right in between there, and the guy still calls. So that's scary. That's scary to me, because if he's afraid of a 10, he's not calling.
Right.
So he's not afraid of a 10, so he must have an overpair.
Or he doesn't believe
have a 10. Yeah, or he doesn't believe you. But
it doesn't make sense that necessarily, well, I guess I wouldn't say it doesn't make sense for us not to have a 10 there. We could easily have Jack 10 and play this, right?
Yeah. Easily have Jack 10.
Now the $80 does seem like trying to get us to call.
Yeah, it sounds like we're 100% beat here. What could he be calling with if he's not afraid of a 10 and he's not afraid of the Jack? How could he keep calling our bets? He's got to have something here, like a set or
an only thing we can hope for that he's on a club draw. And yeah. It's too stupid to get away from it.
Yeah. And or that he's on.
That doesn't really help us, though. You know.
Yeah. Jeez.
You know, unless he checks us on the river, and then we got to check behind on the river, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So how are you betting at this point?
Yeah, no, no way. The pot's way too big to put a bet out there, and then have them just, you know, there's no way that he's going to fold with any reasonable holding, and if we only have Jack high with a five kicker, we really don't want it. We don't want somebody to call a bet here. We want to get away with it. Be happy that we got this big pot for a pair of jacks, you know. But he could easily have pocket tens too. So,
right.
You know, that's a way pocket tens might play. Not believing you have a jack, and then all of a sudden picking up the straight draw onto flop as well, and then making it on the turn. So, all right. I'm done with his hand. If this guy puts money out, unless it's like $12, I'm done with his hand.
All right. The river is the, wait for it, five of spades.
Yeah.
So our final board is eight of clubs, jack of clubs, seven of hearts, nine of hearts, five of spades. So we get our second pair. Pot is squiggly 360, and the villain, of course, insta shoves his remaining one.
Yeah, I'm done with the hand. I have to be done with the hand. I should have been done with the hand before the flop, but I'm done with it now. Even now, something like ace six of clubs gets there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I'm not saying he would have raised with ace six of clubs, but you could have been straddling the whole night, and he could have been just tired of seeing you straddling, and I'm going to raise it with ace six of clubs. And then he gets his flush draw, and then he calls for the flush draw, the straight draw on the turn, and then gets there too. So another hand now beats us that's plausible. I'm not saying it's exactly perfect for this.
Well, this is what I love about poker, because the insta shove is what I like to analyze here, right? When do you get an insta shove? It's either that the guy decided already that he's going to shove no matter what comes in the river, right?
Mm-hmm.
He thinks he can push us off this hand, which is probably pretty scary to think that. I don't think it'd happen. Which could mean that he doesn't have the hand, or he does have the hand. Otherwise, I mean, what would this card give? Like you said, it'd have to be like the A6.
Right.
Would be the only thing that this 5 really helps him make that shove with, right? So it's either a bluff, or he already had the 10 and just doesn't care and should have added a little more Hollywood, I think.
Right. He could have had Ace-10. He could have had, you know, clubs. He could have had Ace. He could have had any 10, really. Pocket 10s is a real plausible hand here. And the other thing, too, is think about the pot size. I know you want to think about the instant shove, but how much money does this guy have left and how much was in the pot? And we just bet 80 on the turn, so there's no way we're going to fold for what's now 120 left in this guy's hand?
Yeah.
So are we really folding for 120 or whatever it is? So he's got to know that we're not going to fold for 120, so he's got to be shoving with something that beats us, it feels like.
Unless he just doesn't understand what's going on. And that's the problem with 1-3 or 1-2, right?
Yeah.
Is that we could sit here and analyze this thing forever. We've already analyzed it for almost 30 minutes now, right?
Yeah.
And if it comes down to the fact that this guy just doesn't know how to play poker, all of it goes out the window, right?
Yeah.
Because I go back to it, if he has 80 and he called the 80 on the turn but didn't shove then, why would he wait to shove now?
Yeah, unless he just got the nuts and he's milking us for the aggressive player we are. And now that's why he's betting now, because he wants to make sure he doesn't miss
it. Right, so that would be a 10, right?
Yeah, 10. I think we're beat. I mean, we have to be beat here. It feels like it. We don't have to be.
I think the only way we win this is if our guy just is so bad at poker that he thinks that his 150 bet on the end is going to get us to fold. Nothing. Now, obviously, I guess it's going to work for us, because I think we both decided to fold here. So,
Yeah.
All right. Well, our hero says, this play seems really confusing to me.
From my experience, this move polarizes his hand to either monsters or air. However, I would have expected him to check raise or lead on the turn if he had a 10, especially with two flush draws out there, unless he had specifically ace of hearts, 10 of hearts, or ace of clubs, 10 of clubs. But I think those hands would have been more aggressive on the turn. But I lose to a set, but I think most sets wouldn't play the hand this way and would probably just check call the river. I can now beat an overpair, but I wouldn't expect an overpair to shove this river. I also consider ace of clubs, 6 of clubs, or ace of hearts, 6 of hearts, but I think those hands might check call the river as well. I'm getting 3.4 to 1, 150 to win squiggly 5-10, so I only have to be right about 25% of the time for this to be profitable. After tanking for 2 or 3 minutes, I decide that his story doesn't make sense, and I make the call. He immediately says good call and mucks his cards.
Wow.
After the hand, the guy that folded said it was a good thing or raised the flop because he had pocket 10s and would have turned it straight. So he goes on to say, I'm conflicted on whether I should consider this a straddle success or not. Obviously, the end result was favorable. However, I like Lee Child's advice of trying to avoid difficult decisions, and I definitely put myself in a tough spot on a scary board. I ended up committing $300 to a hand that was just a bluff catcher. He says, it seems like straddles almost always produce difficult decisions.
Yeah. That's interesting. So he must have been on a draw the whole way, a club draw or a heart draw when it got there or something of that nature, and then said at the end, hey, the only way I'm going to win is if I shove here now and make him think I have a 10 if he doesn't have a 10. Wow. So we don't even get to know what he had, but it has to be something like you said, like a ace, a big ace clubs. That's the only plausible ace king, ace queen, ace 10 of clubs. No, 10 would even fold it. So that's really the only hand. It has to be two clubs in his hand. Otherwise, he's just thinking that we're just his nut, and he's just going to call us until he gets his chance to shove on us. But why wouldn't he have done that earlier? You know, why would he check and calling? It has to be a draw.
You know,
I would think. It has to be a club draw there.
Or again, it goes back to what I was saying. I mean, the guy just doesn't know how to play.
Yeah, he doesn't have to play. And that's terrible. Well, it's good for us, though. We win a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's cool.
See, but ultimately, it's a great example of why straddles are bad.
Yeah, they're tough.
There's good reasons for it, particularly this button straddle, but you got to be a special kind of player, I think, to make them profitable.
CJ, I had faith in you the whole time that you built your stack up through skill, not like Scott here. I knew that was a skill play by you, buddy.
Oh, man, you're killing me.
All right, Jay, thanks for the hand. Another good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.